Welcome to today's episode of The Power of Reinvention. Here we talk with my guests about the dreams, the visions, and the passions that individuals have every day and dare to explore them. Whether it's business or personal, you're entitled to live the life that you want, and no matter what the circumstances, you have the power to create success, fulfill your dreams, and live with passion. That's what I'm talking about. So dare greatly and happy reinventing, folks. Let's do this. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Power of Reinvention. I'm very excited today to be entertaining a guest that is all the way back in Australia. So for those of you who don't know or have never heard it in my voice before, you are probably going to hear it more today than ever, because this is what happens when an Australian that left Australia a number of years ago talks to another Aussie and my Aussie comes out. So I'm either having a glass of wine and you're going to hear it, or you're going to hear it while I'm talking to Roz. So my guest today is Roz Ben-Moshe. Welcome, Roz. Hi.
Hello, Kathy.
So good to have you here. I'm super excited, and welcome everybody to The Power of Reinvention. We tell stories, we share anecdotes, we inspire, we motivate. All of this is based on my book, Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For? And the interviews and the conversations that we have on this show are hopefully going to help motivate you in some way to look at all parts of your life or one part of your life and see what you could be doing, because it is never too late to reinvent your life. So Roz, we are going to share a little bit about you and then delve into a wonderful conversation. So for those who don't know Roz, she is a laughter, well-being, and positivity author and academic. She's an adjunct lecturer at the School of Public Health and Psychology at La Trobe University in Melbourne, and coordinator of a world-first laughter, resilience, and well-being online short course for professionals. She's also the author of The Laughter Effect, How to Build Joy, Resilience, and Positivity in Your Life, and Laughing at Cancer, How to Heal with Love, Laughter, and Mindfulness, Blending a Memoir and Healing Guide, written following a shocking diagnosis of colon cancer. Often called on for her expert opinion in mainstream media, she's a regular on the airwaves and has written for many publications, including the Canberra Times, Huffington Post, and Wellbeing Magazine. So welcome, Roz. Welcome to my show, and welcome to the U.S., or I should maybe save that for a few weeks from now when you're actually here in person.
Yes. Oh, it's really exciting to be here, and I'll be very excited to be there in a couple of weeks.
We can't wait to have you. And on that note, for those tuning in, if you're in Los Angeles, Roz is actually going to be here doing a book signing event at Chevalier Books here in Los Angeles. And we're timing this podcast to come out just in time. So if you're listening in within a week of the date of April 9th, that is the day in the Larchmont area here in LA that Roz will actually be doing a book signing event. So after hearing what we chat about today, it's going to be really fun to be able to meet you in person. So this is really exciting. And I think while we're at it, before we delve in too deeply, a little call out to my incredible, wonderful cousin, Sean, who connected Roz and I in the first place, who had the insight and the wisdom to know that as two kindred Aussie spirits, who are both authors looking to help and change people's lives in some minute or wonderful way, would really connect and get along. So thank you to you, Shawnee, if you're listening. Love you.
I love you too.
So, Roz, I love to start my conversations with a question that takes you back in time. And my question to you is, who was little Roz? Did you have any idea where life would take you, what your twists and turns would be, what you dreamed about maybe doing when you were 5 or 8 or 12 or even 20 years old? And we wake up and here we are today going, wow, how on earth did I get here? But who was that little Roz? What were those dreams? What were those curiosity moments that, you know, you thought would take you somewhere?
Great question. So I think I always knew I wanted to help people. I really enjoyed bringing smile or, you know, a laugh to someone's face. And I had two very inspiring grandmothers who used to volunteer in old age homes, and I'd often sort of follow in tow. And I really just admired just the impact that they had. And also just as a little girl, you know, a cute little girl, you know, just how people responded to me. So I sort of knew some, you know, where that I would love to help people. And I actually decided in my final year of school that I would become a social worker. And my dad was a doctor, and he happened to know head of social work at some particular hospital, and organized for me to have a chat with this person. And this person said, you know what, you'll have enough, problems of your own in your life. Maybe you want to consider something else. I'm thinking that was not the advice I was expecting to get, which was reinforced by my parents. So I was sort of left hanging, this desire to help people. I thought it was going to be a simple case of becoming a social worker. And then I thought, maybe I'll become a psychologist. However, statistics at the time were a bit of a downer. So I only did one subject of psychology as part of my arts degree. So, and then I thought I'd go into public relations because that sounded like a good thing to do.
Well, there's a lot of psychology in that as well. And it's very funny, your story about that, only because when I went to college, I filed as a psych major. And I thought that's what I wanted to do. And I took Psych 101. I went to that very first class for the first semester. And I thought, oh, Lord, I don't really want to spend my whole life analyzing other people's problems. And lo and behold, 35 years later, after running a marketing agency, that is all I do, is analyze other people's problems and help them solve them. And so somewhere in there, I don't think you can really take that sense of who we are out of who we've become, right? And that's why it's always such a very interesting conversation. I have a chapter in the book that's called Hello, Are You Still In There? And I think it's really a beautiful thing to look back and see what those early kind of nuggets of who we thought we wanted to be, where we thought we wanted to go on our life journey, and see where it actually does connect with where we are today. And it may not always be that different. I mean, you know, I think I wanted to be a ballerina at some point. Yeah, that's not going to ever happen. But I do love to dance, and I go dance for exercise and fitness. And, you know, I think it's fun to kind of make those connections. So tell us a bit about what were the next stages in your life from a career standpoint? Where did you find yourself steering towards?
Yeah, it's interesting because it was certainly not a smooth trajectory. I lasted 6 whole weeks in public relations.
Dare I ask?
I got an internship. I know, I got an internship, and they put me on two of their clients. One was gambling poker machines that were coming into Victoria at the time, and the other was horse racing. And I just thought, oh my gosh, this is just not me. So then I sort of, you know, just put the word out. Anything, you know, I'm looking for some sort of role. And I actually landed a job with the Australia-Israel Chamber of Commerce as their first executive officer and then later executive director. So I was really the Jackie of all trades. I was, you know, helping organize trade missions and conference, you know, luncheon events, you know, writing the newsletter, you know, a lot of, meeting and greeting, that sort of thing. And it's interesting, whilst, I was good at my job, it didn't really fill my cup. I knew it wasn't going to be the last place. And then I ended up moving to Israel for a time, and I actually was appointed the Israeli equivalent of that. And destiny had a different message for me. I went on a trip to Sinai, had a wonderful few days there, and came back with dysentery. And this dysentery then ended up percolating into chronic fatigue syndrome or yuppie flu. And I became very, very ill. So much so I was more or less bedridden for 6 months. So this is in my early 20s. Oh. So, you know, this executive career life that I had mapped out was clearly not a good fit for me. So then I came back to Australia and started to get on top of my health, made a lot of adjustments to my diet, saw, you know, every person, you know, you could possibly imagine, from the, you know, traditional to the holistic to the loopy. And I became very interested in this idea of food as medicine, and that, you know, what we eat is really fundamental to our well-being. And thought I had it all figured out, wrote lots of recipes. This is going back 25 years ago. I wrote a series of recipes and compiled them into a book, gluten-free, dairy-free, largely vegetarian, sent them off to publish.
Way, way ahead of your time.
And they got back to me and said, there is very little market value in this. So I could have been speaking to you as the queen of gluten-free, Kathy, but that was not meant to be.
That's funny. Well, you do quite well with that nowadays, especially, you know, with the health craze and where people are at. But very interesting that you had that sort of very early insight into that.
Yes, exactly. So then what happened was I went back to the drawing board and thought, okay, what's going to be next for me? Because I didn't feel like going back and, you know, getting more rejection letters. So I, you know, Googled, you know, health, you know, well, health and well-being courses. And I made an inquiry with La Trobe University and they said, sure, thank you, but you've got very little experience in this field. We'd like you to get a bit of experience and then we'll consider your application. So as luck would have it, there was a World Health Promotion Conference in Melbourne around that time. And I volunteered as a rapporteur. And I went into, you know, the sessions and I reported on them and they were so fascinating. And I thought, this is it. And one of the sessions, a lunchtime session, was a laughter yoga session. And I thought, this I have to report on. So off I went, you know, with my pad and my pen. And boy, it was this one place that you don't write about this experience. You have to do it. You have to feel it. So immediately the pad and the pen went under the seat and I was immersed in this slightly wacky experience of, you know, 70 plus people in the room and, you know, a facilitator running us through this idea of simulated laughter exercises, you know, like a greeting laugh, you know, deep breathing and clapping, ho, ho, ha, ha, ha. And it was extraordinary because whilst initially I felt totally outside of my comfort zone, by the end I received far greater health bounce from that 30-minute session than I had in the years in and out of assorted practitioners, you know, clinics. So I knew somehow I'd come back to this. But of course I had to start my serious studies, which I did. So I started postgrad health promotion, loved it so much. Then I began a Master of Public Health. And as you can imagine, there was a lot of talk about mental health. But what I was hearing was, you know, talk about, you know, stress statistics and anxiety and depression. I'm thinking, hold on a second. What about this thing, you know, laughter? That to me seems like, you know, the ultimate expression of positive mental health. So I trained as a laughter yoga facilitator and started, you know, to run programs for community health groups, you know, basically for anyone who, you know, was interested. And I became very good at preaching about laughter being the best medicine. I'd go into a, you know, cancer support group, and I'd say, you know, laugh more. It's really good for you, sort of thing. It'll help promote your, you know, well-being and activate a whole host of, you know, assorted benefits. But as they say, I had a plan. God laughed, and I was diagnosed with colon cancer about 12 years ago. And as you can imagine, there's nothing funny about a cancer diagnosis. And then following major, bowel surgery, which involved a major bowel resection and a temporary ileostomy, which is basically wear a bag on the outside and process your shit on the outside for a bit, pardon my language. This thing, you know, I was in so much pain for so many weeks that this thing, laughter, that I had taken for granted my whole life was temporarily taken away from me. I didn't feel like laughing, and even if I did, I couldn't.
And were you able at that point, knowing what you knew, were you able to sort of have that conversation with yourself to say, I've been telling everybody else about the power of laughter, I have to practice this myself? Or were you in a place where what sounds like it was unfathomable and you couldn't, which must have been a very complicated set of emotions, knowing what you knew? I mean, it's one thing when someone tells you and you're hearing it for the first time and realizing this could be an anecdote, a solution, a helpful benefit, whatever it might be. And here you knew all of this, but still sounds like you weren't in a place where you could really even apply it to yourself.
Well, it's a very good observation, but it actually was because of my inability to access this, you know, wellspring that I had sort of, you know, was so used to, that actually got me starting on what has now become the laughter effect. So I began journaling, and I would challenge my thoughts, and I would use positive reframing, for example, to get myself out of a negative, you know, headspace. For example, you know, didn't want it to be referred as the big C. I referred to it as the little C. I realized that, you know, when I started to, think about all of the things that I was grateful for, you know, having had this operation, I wasn't thinking at the same time of all of the things that I didn't have or that were going wrong in my life. And the more that I actually anchored to those sorts of positive emotions like gratitude or, you know, smiling, your brain, we think our brain is really sophisticated, but we can't sort of occupy two opposing mindsets at the same time. So I realized very, very quickly I could continue down that sort of, you know, downward spiral of woe is me, you know, this is this really sucks. Or I could think, well, I can't laugh now. Certainly in the first few weeks or so, but I can smile, and I can use the energy of smiling, which is going to trigger a whole host of positive, you know, hormones, well-being hormones like, you know, serotonin and endorphins. So just endorphins alone are 30 times more potent than their synthetic version, morphine. And I realized if I added some smiling to my regular meditation practice, for a moment or two, I would forget my pain. Or, you know, when I became, you know, less pain, you know, more pain free, you know, one of the first things I did was, you know, I had, you know, a young family at the time. They had two boys, 12 and 15, not so young, and a husband. And whenever we're going through challenging times, we think it's all happening to us, but it's not. It's happening to people who are in our world. So I would make a ritual of as many evenings as we could to sit down on the couch together. We would take turns choosing a sitcom, and whether I laughed out loud or even laughed on the inside if it was too painful, it just helped as it firstly connect one another and really help to diminish stress that had been built up. And that was particularly important for my youngest son at the time.
Yeah, that's amazing. So an extraordinary pivotal point for you on a personal level. Clearly, you know, there had to be such an important time to really evaluate the work you were doing. And as you started to feel better, as you started to realize the impact of it because of your own personal journey, was that a moment in time that you really started to look at what was next for you? And if so, what was that? What was that moment where you said, you know, I call them aha moments, when you kind of have this, you know, sort of revelation or this epiphany about what you needed to do for you going forward that in fact seems to be the work you are doing now? Was that a moment in time or did that come later?
Oh, Lord, I had a good one. At the time I was still lecturing and teaching at my university. I was managing two elderly parents. My mum at the time had Alzheimer's. I had two youngish kids, and I ended up getting a 12 months post my the major operation. You know, you have your review consultation. So at that particular review consultation, when I had an MRI, they picked up a little spot on my liver. Now, when I went to speak to the specialist about it, he said, "I don't think that was there when we did this a year ago. You know, I think it might look a little bit different, but you know, go see the gastroenterologist and, you know, we'll see." So of course I go to the gastroenterologist and he said he thought that it would look fine, but he would like to do further investigation. But considering I'd had so much radiation of sort of things these past few months, he said, "Just, you know, I'd like to do this in 3 months' time. Let's do it in 3 months' time. Try not to worry." Ha, ha, ha. Well, that stimulated peak anxiety. And I suppose I had psychologically built myself, you know, invested so much strength into going into the operation and recovery. This I wasn't expecting. And honestly, I started to fall apart. I developed really chronic anxiety, but as I say, continued with whatever I was doing and ended up in my doctor's surgery once again with heart palpitations. And she said, "I'd like to just, you know, for 24 hours wear this heart monitor and we'll just make sure that, you know, everything is in order." Now, at the time, to add to my load, I actually had begun a new research project facilitating laughter therapy activities in aged care. Okay, so the morning of my first session, I decided that I better wear a high-buttoned shirt because underneath I had, you know, the heart monitor things. And I walked into the aged care facility thinking, "Oh my gosh, I swear, I reckon I feel older than these residents." But, you know, again, you know, you put on your happy face, you run the session, it went well, and went back, you know, took off the halter. The next day I had actually been booked for a year nine. So for 15-year-olds, a well-being session, a well-being laughter yoga session at a private girls' school. So I turned up to this, facilitate the session, and it was in a big auditorium. So the sound guy said, "Listen, I need to wire you up to a mic." So wired me up and it was like this, it was like the heavens opened and everything just, it was just like, "Hello, Roz. Either continue on the path that you have been doing and you're going to, you know, end up having more health issues and, you know, that sort of heart, you know, monitoring thing, or choose laughter and just drop all of the stuff that, you know, doesn't fill your, you know, soul and heart, and you will be well." And so literally within 24 hours, I went from wired up to a heart monitor to wired up to a sound system, and I know which one that I chose.
Oh, wow.
And that was a real pact that I made with myself back then. She's laughter.
And you really, right. And okay, so that's that was most definitely your aha moment.
Yes.
Which I love. And I think that, you know, there's something really extraordinary. I'm getting chills as I'm saying this, but to be in such a place of adversity and challenge emotionally, health-wise, spiritually, on all levels, and to be able to have that clarity, you know, when we're doing what is right and when we're doing what feels right, to be able to recognize it, to be open enough to hear that, to hear the calling, to hear the feel, you know, what it is that's going to be that pivotal moment is so important. Only because we don't have a lot of time, and I feel like this could be like a 5-hour conversation for you and I, but you wrote this beautiful book, Laughter Effect, right? It's Laughter Effect, How to Build Joy, Resilience, and Positivity in Your Life, which is the book which is really right now in your life, your ability to go out and share your story and talk to people about what they could be doing. What are the big takeaways for you that you want people to know and understand? The reason you wrote the book, the things that you're going to talk about in your book tour, the life lessons, the things that you're teaching in these courses that you're doing, in these rooms that you're in. What are some of the things that, you know, look, whether we're having a good day or a bad day, and I always say how I want people to reinvent their lives from a place of positivity. This is not a book about when you're down and out and there's adversity in your life, try to reinvent. No, the whole book is like, wow, my life is so good. What else is there? Oh, but yes, of course, there's a chapter if, you know, you're challenged by something in life, be it a relationship or a job or something, you know, that's an important conversation. But in this moment, what are those things that we should be looking out for? How do we put the laughter effect into effect in our lives?
So positivity is an action word. It's a doing word. We have to do positivity. We have to practice it. And essentially, we all want, you know, more joy and, you know, good well-being in our life. So laughter is just one of the tools that I advocate in the laughter effect. It can be something, you know, simple, just, you know, no matter what you sort of might be facing, you know, when you wake up in the morning, but putting, you know, a heartfelt smile on your face and knowing that by doing that, as opposed to, you know, a grimace, the next person that you meet, whether it's your partner or your kid or your colleague, you're more likely to pass on the ripple effect of the smile. So whatever we practice, whatever, you know, is what we get good at. So whether that's, you know, thinking about everything that's going wrong in our life or proactively choosing to be grateful and not just from a superficial, you know, level, really sinking and soaking in, absorbing that energy of, you know, what we are grateful for. And I like to break this down as micro moments, as small things. This is so important. If someone is going through challenging times or adversity, the last thing that you're going to want to, you know, say to them is, oh, just think about, you know, all of the, you know, your next birthday or something. We don't want to think big. We want to think little. But that doesn't mean to say it's not significant. We want to recount, you know, in a day, you know, blue sky days, cups of tea shared with a friend, a lovely conversation, you know, a walk in nature, all of these little things that we can, you know, be grateful for that bring a smile to our face, then necessarily there is less room for the stuff that doesn't. And it's, you know, time is a resource. So as much as possible, spend time with people that lift you up, that don't bring you down. Choose to get into the habit of, if you're feeling a bit flat, you know, keep a humor journal, you know, like a humor scrapbook. People have like a gratitude journal, you know, be on the lookout for things that make you laugh, that make, you know, that connect you to others. Start a WhatsApp group with family and friends and just share some, you know, fun jokes. Even, you know, in your workplace, get into, you know, the idea of, you know, keep brushing up on your tongue twisters or, you know, just starting a meeting by recounting, you know, did something funny, you know, happen to you this, you know, in week, for example. And the more that we practice these things, the more that we actually rewire our brain towards levity, towards joy, and towards, you know, as I say, you know, positivity, and build resources that we can then draw on moments where we are feeling, you know, a little bit down. Because life isn't all, you know, a bed of roses. But, you know, the more we have these skills, such as what I advocate in my book, the more equipped we can be to face them, you know, and build our own resilience and well-being.
I love that. You know, it's really special because there's so much overlap in my conversations and my approach to this reinvention topic, where I talk of putting on rose-colored glasses and seeing the world through a different lens, even if it's just for a moment, because it helps you realize that where you're at is not where you always have to be, and that you do have the ability. I love what you said about the WhatsApp group. I've got many WhatsApp groups, some are business ones, some are news, some are friends, some are whatever. And when you just think about how it takes you out of the moment of whatever you're doing, good, bad, otherwise, you know, a stressful day, a fun day, it does help reframe your point of view, your disposition. It's like stopping and taking a deep breath. And the more we remind ourselves that we're entitled to do that for ourselves, the more we can actually actuate that and live it and have it. And to be playful, to be silly, to be able to giggle, to be able to laugh, to be able to smile, it will change your disposition. And even if it's for a moment, but if you can do it for a moment, you can do it for many moments. And if you can do it for many moments, you can do it for greater periods of time, which then goes back to what you were saying about the effect it has, the dopamine, the impact, the cellular level that then that starts to affect us on, and our ability to manage and control so many of our health issues. It goes so deep. And if we allow ourselves to believe in just the smallest way, going back to what you said, just the, you know, let it be the small things. Let it be that small moment, because all that will do is validate the effect it can have on you. And if you have the ability to see that for a moment, imagine what it could do if you had many moments that felt more like that. So I love the work that you're doing and your ability to go out and impact rooms full of people and share this now in this book. You're doing a book tour in Australia. You're coming here to the States. Tell us a bit about what your plans are when you're here in the US, because the majority of my audience is here. So I want them to know where and how they'll be able to connect and have a little bit more of Roz and this conversation.
Yeah, to ways which we can put our laughter lenses on to view the world.
There you go.
So I start off in LA, and then I've got a few interviews and things, and then I'm off to New York, some more events, still waiting on a couple of things to fall into place. And then I'm very excited. I'm going to be keynoting at the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor Conference in Denver. And I've got a book event in Denver as well. Then I come back to LA on my way back home. And that's when I've got the fun book event at Chevalier's Books in Larchmont on the 9th of April. So lots of fun. And just so grateful that I can do this. And so far, you know, I've just been getting just such beautiful reception from people. And I think that in part that is because the world is a mess, right? We can't there's no way we can control the mess out there, but we can at least try and control the mess, you know, within. So, and, you know, and to have, you know, tools that, you know, can uplift and, you know, energize and, you know, connect us better and, you know, get back to essentially the fundamentals of who we have always been. You know, we smile and laugh before, you know, we communicate with words. You know, it's like ha 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 before da da da.
The giggle, right. Oh, sorry. I know. We get so excited when we see a baby smile. Yes. And it's like, look, they smile.
Yes. No, we can do it too. We can.
Well, but that's the beauty of, going back to some of our own basics.
That's
right?
Exactly right. And it's amazing. The more you put these, you know, techniques into you know, practice, the more just you just walk down the street and realize people are smiling at you. Forget about you smiling at them.
Well, I think we all know it's contagious. And yes. We know when we walk in a room or we go to a coffee shop and we smile at someone, they can't help but smile back. And you've changed someone's day when you do that. And I'm a big proponent of that. It's my natural sort of state of being. And I love that. So I think it's really special that we get to do that. So let me ask you this. If you had to leave the audience with one tip, trick, piece of advice, something that you feel we could all do going forward every day, what would that be?
Okay. I actually like this idea called a traffic light moment. And I'm sure in LA there are lots of opportunities.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, we all have stress, right? So, you know, we're running late and get to where we want to get to a meeting. And damn, that light is red. So rather than sort of go through that motion of, oh my gosh, red light, grr, take it as an opportunity to breathe, to smile. Or if you're feeling a bit anxious about whatever is coming next, just choose to just laugh out loud. You know, laughter is a very vulnerable act. However, if you were laughing in the car, any passerby or, you know, car that pulls up next to you, they're just going to assume that you're having a laugh with, you know, a friend or a colleague. So it's just a way of just reframing those, you know, red traffic light moments from, you know, that grizzle and grump to an opportunity to smile, to breathe and laugh. And the more you do that, the more, you know, you're actually going to be changing the, you know, your behavior going forward. So, you know, don't leave these feel good feelings to chance. We need to take it, you know, into our own hands, be very intentional and enjoy the process.
I love that. So I ask a question typically at the end of every interview. I'm going to ask you this, but I'm going to slightly change it up. If you could have a dinner party and invite anybody to that table, 3 or 4 people, they could be living or not. But in your case, I'm going to say, who would make you smile? Who would make you laugh? Who are the people when you think are such a beautiful example of putting a smile on your face that you would want to surround yourself with, that would be so joyful to have a glass of wine and break bread with? Who might you have at that table?
Oh, that is such a tricky thing, because I have a superpower in that basically when I'm with people, most people smile back at me. So there's generally, there are so many people I want at that table. It'll be the longest table ever. And I love the idea of the contagiousness of, you know, the more the merrier, literally. Who would I want? Well, I'm sure after this interview, I'll think, oh, I should have chosen them. Well, well, I could go with, like, you know, a stock standard, you know, amazing comedian, you know, Jerry Seinfeld. That'd be pretty fun. Jerry, if you're tuning in, come along. Who else? Oh my gosh, it's so hard.
Come on, you're coming to LA and New York. You know, some of these comedians might be out there and might just have to pop in and visit you. So
listen, if I could, you know, if I could, yeah, you know what, Steve Martin, you're invited. Robin Williams, of course, you've got a place.
Would have been amazing, extraordinary.
So, you know, just anyone with a good heart, good sense of humor, joy and love in their heart. And
they're welcome to, to the table.
You know, but smiling and laughing with one another, it's an act of kindness. So as long as people, you know, are kind and joyful, they're always welcome to come and break bread with me. Always.
I love that. I love that. Well, you know what? I think if all of us surrounded ourselves with people that were smiling and joyful and bringing joy into our lives, the world would be a bit of a better place. And I think there are a lot of corners of this world that could all use a bit of that. So hopefully there'll be a trickle effect from this conversation and those who listen, those who read your book, those who get to meet you. Roz, I can't wait to meet you in person when you're here. We're going to have a lot of fun together, and we're going to smile a lot and have a lot of fun. But I really am so appreciative of what you're doing and the perspective that you come from. I think you're just making the world a much more beautiful place, you know, one laugh at a time. And I just
actually
what's that?
That used to be my motto actually a while ago.
Well, it's funny because I will tell you, as I literally was listening to you, and I so often need to come up with the title of the podcast, and I literally wrote down changing the world one laugh at a time.
Love it.
So well, with your approval and everybody else now listening into our process, I think that will end up being the title of your podcast that we're posting.
Couldn't think of a better one. Well done.
So I thank you so much for being on here today, for sharing, being able to share you with our audience. And I'm super excited, as I said, to meet you. For those who are curious and want to know more, the book again is called Laughter Effect, How to Build Joy, Resilience, and Positivity in Your Life. You can learn more about Roz at roz-benmoshe.com. We'll put all of this in the show notes, so it'll be right there when you're not listening. You can look. And any other way to access you or anything else you want to share, Roz, before we have to sign off?
Mental telepathy? No.
You're good? I love that. That's my favorite medium. Wonderful. Well, thank you, my dear. So lovely to have you here, and can't wait to see you in Los Angeles on April 9th. And we'll make sure that your dates for some of your other events that you're doing are also in the show notes so people can tune in. And definitely go to her website because you'll be able to get a lot there. And for those looking for any other stories or information or previous interviews, please go to the reinventionexchange.com. Blogs, podcast interviews, previous virtual chats, lots of inspired links and content to reinvent many parts of your life. So thank you for joining us and have a wonderful week. Happy reinventing, everybody. And thank you, Roz.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks for listening to The Power of Reinvention. If you enjoyed this episode, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and review the show. Wouldn't mind a 5-star review. It would be greatly appreciated. Also, be sure to visit thereinventionexchange.com to share your reinvention stories, suggest a guest, join the newsletter mailing list, get access to my book, which is called Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For?, and discover fantastic bonus content with my blogs, and listen in to the Reinvention Virtual Chat series. Don't forget to join me next week for another episode. Please share with a friend, and thank you for listening. Happy reinventing.